This is Word of Mouth on New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Elaine Grant, in for the vacationing Virginia Prescott. Today on the show, are young people becoming less empathetic? And if so, should we care? Plus, jazz great Danilo Perez talks about the influence of fatherhood on his latest album and the influence and inspiration that comes from performing with a living legend. And our internet Sherpa Brady Carlson returns from his latest sojourn to the web to share what's awesome online. But first, what research into coral reefs may tell us about the state of the ocean dating back hundreds of years. Independent producer Ari Daniel Shapiro has tracked killer whales off the coast of Norway, studied biological ocean and has studied how gray seals vocalize. He joins us today to talk about the fate of clams and coral reefs from the studios of WBUR in Boston. Ari, great to have you on Word of Mouth.
Yes, thanks so much for having me, Elaine.
Ari, before we get into your latest stories on coral reefs and surf clams, tell us a little about you. You studied oceanography and were a practicing scientist before you went into journalism. What prompted the switch?
Well, I guess I've always been interested in telling stories, and that was certainly one of my favorite parts of graduate school was teaching and telling people about the research that I was working on. And so it was, I suppose, kind of a natural switch to think about doing radio, and I just love it. I continue to get to learn a lot about science and the environment, which I've always been interested in, and I get to teach people about it as well, which I've really enjoyed doing. So I feel like I'm still immersed in the science, but get to learn a lot more about a variety of different fields.
Okay. Now let's get back to coral reefs. Give us a quick recap on what exactly corals are and their importance to ocean ecosystems.
So you can probably, if you envision a coral, you probably imagine the kind of boulder or branching tree. These things are actually colonies that are made up of millions of tiny animals that look like anemones. And inside those tissues of the anemones are algae, which photosynthesize and convert sunlight to food. And so that helps feed the animals, and the animals give the algae a home. And so it's kind of symbiosis. And over the centuries, these tiny animals have grown millimeter by millimeter, leaving behind these skeletons, and they grow into huge structures that we see today. They're incredibly valuable to both the natural ecosystems for providing habitat and food for a lot of the fish that are there, and they're also extremely valuable to people. They protect the shorelines from tsunamis and hurricanes, and they also provide fish for us, but they're very fragile. They're vulnerable to pollution, to runoff, to climate change, and increased carbon dioxide in the atmosphere.
You recently worked on a story about coral researchers. Tell us a little bit about that story.
Yeah, so this is going to be an audio excerpt from an audio slideshow with photos that I did for Oceanus. That's the magazine for the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution. And it's entitled The Once and Future Corals. We'll be hearing from a scientist at the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution named Conrad Hewen, who's in the Marine Chemistry and Geochemistry Department.
All right, let's take a listen.
Swimming on a coral reef, sometimes it's like being in a dream. You're swimming through clouds of fish, thousands of fish, swirling around your head. The reefs themselves have their colors and their diversity of forms. There are many different corals, and they're swaying back and forth with fish swimming around through them. And of course, you're flying through this environment. This is one of those times when you get to stick your arms out and steer yourself like an airplane and fly through this environment, like flying over a forest, and see this environment teeming with life. It is one of the best feelings in the world. In addition to being sensitive to the kinds of environmental changes, they are recorders of those very same environmental changes. Essentially, the corals are taking the chemistry of the water and putting it directly into their skeletons so that the coral skeleton preserves a record of the environmental changes like temperature and salinity at the time that the coral was growing. To get these records of environmental change out of the corals themselves, we don't want to lift up an entire colony from the bottom of the ocean, but instead we can take a sample from it. We use a hydraulic drill underwater to take a pillar of coral. so the result of all of this work is that we then have a continuous column of coral rock that is a timeline from the modern day with living tissue at the top going back through time to the bottom when the coral was in fact newly born. So the value of getting records like these out of corals is to try and identify patterns of temperature changes in the past. How warm were the warms and how cold were the colds? And how quickly did the climate change between these extremes?
So, Ari, what are scientists learning from this kind of research?
Well, so Conrad Hewan has made a total of 3 trips to the Red Sea, and that's where he's been doing a lot of this work. And he's extracted 21 cores of these kind of cylinders from the corals that stretch north to south all the way along the Red Sea from Sinai to Yemen. And he's got records that go back as far as 400 years. So you can imagine these cores that are as long as 18 feet. And he's reconstructing the climate patterns on the scale of the entire Red Sea, which is 1,000 miles, so basically the length of the entire eastern U.S. And what he's found is that the Red Sea corals are actually able to record the climate changes in the northern Atlantic Ocean in a very precise way. So by looking back through the coral, we get a sense of how the oceans have changed and varied over time. And he's going on to do this work in the South China Sea. So he's going to be working and getting cores from Hong Kong, Vietnam, Taiwan, Philippines, and Malaysia, in order to try to piece together another part of the ocean and look in the past there as well.
Great. Let's move from corals to clams. Tell us, what is a surf clam? And tell us a little bit about the clip that we're about to hear.
Yeah, so a surf clam is the kind that you would eat in clam chowder or as fried clams. And they're fished from Virginia all the way up to Cape Cod. And we're about to hear a clip that I produced for a podcast called Ocean Gazing. It's about ocean observing science and technology that I produce for the Centers for Ocean Sciences Education Excellence Networked Ocean World. And the woman speaking is Bonnie McKay. She works at Rutgers University as an environmental or ecological anthropologist. So she studies how human beings relate to their natural environments.
Great. Let's take a listen.
The surf clam, or the Atlantic surf clam, is a fairly large clam, maybe 4 or 5 inches in width. It is harvested by vessels, large fishing boats, that use something called the hydraulic dredge system. So these boats have very, very large steel dredges in the back that are dragged along the bottom.
There she goes!
And hydraulic hoses are used to pump water down into the ocean bottom to basically lift up the clams so that they can then be captured by the teeth of the dredges.
And she does the rest for us.
These clams are taken to processing plants. These clams, they are shucked either by hand or by machine and cooked. And then they appear in cans in the supermarket for clam sauce and chopped clams that become your spaghetti and clam sauce, or they often appear as clam chowder.
Marketing of these clams goes back to the end of the Second World War.
Away we go to Howard Johnson's Clamboree, featuring Howard Johnson's tender sweet fried clam plate. Delicious. And special this month, only $1.29. Set sail with your family now to Howard Johnson's Clamboree.
It's good!
Yes, Howard Johnson's, which used to be ubiquitous along the highways, I would sell fried clams, but that was one of their signature meals. And that's really how this clam became an important fishery.
Is this kind of like one of the first fast foods?
Yes, it is. I think you could say that. It's one of the very first fast foods.
The surf clam fishery has boomed ever since, until recently.
Climate change seems to be warming the waters in the southern region, and the clams are not reproducing. Secondly, there's much more competition from imported clams from other parts of the world now. And fried clams are not as popular as they used to be.
So do you eat clams?
Yes. Do you eat clams?
I live in Boston. I should eat more clam chowder, you know. But I guess I don't eat them that often.
Yes. And you're like most Americans. So the industry would love for you to increase your rate of eating them.
So, Ari, it sounds like both the surf clam fishery and the industry might be in some danger.
That's right. That's right. You know, but the fishery itself is rather sustainable. I mean, since the late 80s, it's been safe and sustainable when the government kind of introduced a way of regulating how many surf clams are caught and farmed or fished. And even now, with climate change reducing these clam populations like we just heard, the population is still considered to be in pretty good shape, and the allowable catch is way below where biologists would recommend a safe level. So it's very sustainable, and the industry has agreed to keep it low, and it's always been quite conservative on that. So hopefully, you know, the industry will make a comeback.
Great. Let's switch gears and go back to a story that I loved that NPR aired a few months back on people in their 90s who still go to work every day.
Right.
Where did you discover this story?
Well, I got the story from Associate Professor of Anthropology, Katrin Lynch. She's at Olin College, and she told me about the Vita Needle Company. It's part of a book that she's writing about senior citizens working well into their golden years.
Great. Let's just take a listen to a little bit of this story.
Tell you, I'm 98 and a half.
That half is important.
That's right. I'm trying to make it to 99. I hope I do.
On this particular day, Finnegan's stamping hundreds of small metal parts that look like pencil erasers. The arthritis is visible in her hands, but the exercise from her job helps keep her fingers reasonably nimble.
I thought retirement with my husband would be nice, but passed away with a heart attack.
Okay, Ari, any updates to that story?
Well, just that Katrin Lynch is continuing to work on her book, and it's a way to kind of learn a lot more about this phenomenon, both at the Vita Needle Company, which is based locally, for me anyway, in Needham, Massachusetts, but also about the trend more nationally.
Ari, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me, Elaine.
Ari Daniel Shapiro is an independent radio producer. He has a PhD in biological oceanography, and his stories have been heard on All Things Considered, Morning Edition, and other public radio outlets. We have links to the stories we talked about and a link to Ari's website at wordofmouthradio.org. Don't forget, you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter and revisit any stories you may have missed by visiting wordofmouthradio.org. Up next, our internet Sherpa Brady Carlson returns from his latest excursion into the wild world of the web and shares his fascinating findings. You're listening to Word of Mouth on New Hampshire Public Radio.